Welcome to Scream Queens Horror Movie Road Trip Podcast. I am your sole survivor, Mr. Josh, and that was Miss Justine. I gotta finish, because you are our final girl, and they gotta know it.
I am a final girl. I am. Do you hear that, world?
You got your soul survivor and your final girl, and we are flying down the highway right now.
Yeah.
You hear those beautiful road noises?
Ugh.
We wish you were in the car with us, guys.
Guys, so we're in New Mexico right now, and we're just driving along, and New Mexico, what's up with Jim Rhodes?
Yeah, we love beautiful enchanted New Mexico, but we're currently on I-40 heading west. We are west of Albuquerque. We're just hitting mile marker 89. But these roads be knocking us around, guys.
I felt a little abused.
It made Justine pee her pants a little bit.
A few times. And I forgot my Depend, so it's actually a dilemma.
I may have sharded and or farted.
Oh, no. That was the assumption you had was that you would just fart. And then the reality is that you sharted.
Oh, I was leaving the and or, so it could maybe sound hypothetical.
No, we're not
pissing and shitting up in this car. But we are having a damn good time road tripping in the USA. And where are we heading, Justine?
I can't wait to tell you guys. We're headed to Las Vegas. Yes, Nevada, not New Mexico.
Before you get mad at us, we are not going to Vegas right now in a pandemic to whoop it up.
No.
Last episode, you
no
finish.
Way.
You tell them.
Oh,
tell them what we're
no.
doing.
We would never do that. My sister recently moved, and so we're hanging out at her house helping her decorate, yeah. helping her just relax. And
bringing a few boxes.
I've got some stuff that she left behind, and we're going to hang out with her, and we are going to go to an outdoor experience called the Neon Boneyard. Bone Baby Yard.
Neon.
And it's kind of like where a lot of like Las Vegas neon signs
go
to be restored, a little haven for them, and there's lights, like they have like a light display, and it's just sweet.
Yeah, there's a Vegas tradition of when, you know, they're always tearing down the casinos to build new hotels, new casinos, and the Neon Boneyard is where a lot of the old neon signs go to live out the rest of their lives.
Yes, they're still glowing, you know, they still like to show them because, of course, you know, it might have been a long time since you visited Las Vegas, and you want to just see that old sign that brought you there that first time.
It's a good dose of colorful nostalgia. And we're going to go during the day and go back and see it at night, get some cool pictures, just experience that. That's kind of like our main draw why we're here. We're not going to be in the casinos.
No.
We might go to a restaurant that is, you know, abiding by the CDC guidelines for restaurants.
Yeah, we're still waiting to hear back on our reservation request. They're taking it seriously.
Yeah, most restaurants are only at 25% capacity in Vegas. So
we're
not going to whoop it up, unfortunately, but we're going to have fun, and we'll whoop it up at her sister's house and have a good time.
It's going to be amazing. Shout out to Dakota. We're headed to you today, baby.
So, since we're going...
Baby!
Since we're going to the Neon Boneyard, I'm stretching out the neon.
Yeah.
That's our connection.
Emphasize.
It's our connection.
Articulate it.
Connection. To our movie that we're covering today, which is, Justine?
The Neon Demon. It's a Nicholas Winding Refn 2016 film. Watch it. Pause right here, guys.
Go watch it.
It's on Amazon for free.
And then come back and enjoy our take on it.
And yes. So pause. See you in a bit.
Come back.
Hey, guys. You're back. All right.
Hi.
Okay. So we're going to cover the Neon Demon.
What'd you guys think of the movie? Crazy, huh? Let's talk about it.
Let's break it down.
So, 2016 Nicholas Winding Refn.
Refn is a little roughin'.
Oh, he's roughing it up in this one. It's a classic kind of 20 teens. It's
20
a classic 20 teens.
Yes.
Horror slow burn.
Yeah.
Is what I was trying to spit out of my damn mouth.
And it's dreamy. And it's flowy.
And not for everybody.
And it's showy.
Oh, flowy and showy.
Flowy. I mean, I'm just rhyming now.
I like when you rhyme, but let's get going.
Let's get going. Okay, so, yeah, it's not for everyone. Obviously, he's got a style.
And he's trying something a little different here. Oh, a little different and a little the same. We've seen some of these themes before of, you know, beauty being indulged to negative effects. You know?
Yeah.
That's kind of a classic theme.
Predator and prey, like LA, it spits, you know, it chews you up and spits you out.
Letting your environment take control of you. You becoming the thing that you didn't want to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's some themes up on here.
Damn.
This movie has some themes, Justine.
How about we unfold those, unpackage those? How about we just, I'm going to delicately undo it like a Christmas. You know when you get a Christmas present and you're like, I like this wrapping.
I want to
say that. And for a little
bit,
you try to like open it at the corners. And then you get a little upset with yourself when you see that you've pulled some of that paper.
And then you say, oh, fuck it.
And then you're just like, never mind. Okay, here we go.
That's a good metaphor for our show. We start off like, oh, let's peel the corners. And then by the end, it's like ball jokes.
It's a ripped up mess. And there's a big present at the end.
But that's what road tripping is about.
Yes.
It's just a couple gals.
you have this idea of how you're going to do the road trip.
Having fun on the road.
But then like whatever unfolds, unfolds, and it's fun. And at this point, we're on episode 61. Boy, have we done some road trips.
Yeah, we know a thing or two about road trips.
61.
So here we are out in the middle of the desert talking about L.A. and a classic... It's a classic story, of, as we were saying, of things going wrong.
It has themes that are timeless.
Things going wrong. I'm so articulate.
It's okay. Something got to do with something, boo.
Something got to do with something. So our movie starts with an eyeball. It's the glitter and that beautiful...
Hold on, we want to introduce the cast and everything, don't we?
But do we? Yeah, we do.
Okay,
you're
okay,
right.
We
I'm
do,
just
we
like,
don't. Okay.
Fucking
Nicholas
it up.
Wine,
I'm always
it's
fucking
fine.
It up.
It's the desert does that to people, Josh, and I understand this. One time, before we even, get into this, when Josh and I were much younger in our years, we drove from Los Angeles to Oklahoma City, and we stopped in the desert... And we danced to the Smiths music. And
it was Bjork.
It was Bjork. Yeah.
We danced to Bjork in the desert.
Yes. So we have had moments in the desert, Josh. I'll never forget them.
It does things to you.
It does things to you.
All right, let's keep going. Yeah,
all right.
The cast, crew.
All right, Nicholas Winding Refn. He didn't just direct this shiz. He wrote it.
And you might know him from Drive fame.
Yeah, you might know him from Only God Forgives. You might know him because he's your neighbor.
It's true.
You might know him. It's
Let
okay if you do. In fact, that would be awesome. Hit us up and say, he's like my bud.
Yeah, let's
my
know.
My backdoor bud.
If he's your backdoor bud. If he's your buddy, your friend, your neighbor, let's know. That's cool.
Or maybe he's not your guy. Maybe he's not your friend. Maybe he's not your buddy.
Maybe you don't know him at all.
That's okay. You're with us. We don't really know him at all. I mean, all right, we kind of get an aesthetic from him. Okay, let's just keep going. So he wrote it, he directed it, and he's got Elle Fanning. Wonder who she's related to.
I think her name is Idaho Fanning. Kentucky Fanning. What's her sister's
name? New Mexico Fanning.
Oh, Dakota.
Yeah, Dakota Fanning. Got her sis a gig, but in respect, Elle Fanning, you bring it, girl.
Yeah, she's doing her own thing.
You got your own thing.
She might have got her foot in the door because of her sister.
Or maybe not.
But she's got a pretty foot.
But she got a damn pretty foot.
And she's going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to walk all over this movie.
She going to shove it in crevices and in places and orifices.
Yeah.
Maybe she's not going to do that.
That's her body, her choice.
You don't know.
That's her pretty foot.
Yeah, that's her foot to do with what she like, okay? Jenna Malone. Jenna Malone, girl, you've been around for a hot fucking minute.
Stepmom. Any bastard out of Carolina fans out there?
anybody
Donnie Darko.
Yeah, what is that, Saved movie? Yeah. Anybody out there know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you might know her from
you
those
You might know
films.
Her.
Sucker Punch, perhaps.
Might know her.
She's intense and kind of looks like a really pretty elf.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She has very delicate features.
Not a Peter Jackson elf, because they're all blonde, but like a brunette elf. Put a blonde wig on her and she could be a Peter Jackson.
And they're not all blonde, because like in The Hobbit, the main elf girl falls in love with one of the dwarves is not.
Oh, that's true.
So you just made up a whole bunch of shit and lived Tyler. Is not
Tyler's not blonde.
How fucking dare you, sir?
Okay, well, the hottest one, Legolas, is blonde.
No,
that's all
that is so true. That's truth, okay?
Anyways, Jenna Malone, we love her.
I love her.
She looks a little like a beautiful elf. Okay?
Yeah, she also doesn't ever age, so girl, keep up that skincare regimen. I'm jealous.
It's got to be the plant-based squalene.
It's squalene. It's got to be. It's got to be a lot of things. Maybe things that are referenced in this
film. Yeah, she's creepy in this movie. She's not a beautiful elf in this movie. I mean, she looks like a beautiful elf, but she doesn't act like one.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. Girl, you got some troubles. Okay, next up we got Abby Lee as Sarah. Abby Lee, she's been recently on Lovecraft Country.
Yes, love that show.
And woo, love her.
She's intense. She's got a very intense presence.
Oh my gosh, and it is a look. We were talking earlier, Josh and I, about her look, and I kind of made a joke about how it's like Neve Campbell has her little like moment in a lot of films. She love Neve Campbell.
Yeah, we're Neve Campbell stands.
It just like Neve transcends, like her characters are all interconnected. It's a universe of Neve. Okay, so like just go with that. So Abby Lee, girl, you got that vibe, okay? You got that intense look in your face. You like to kind of like
You like to serve it.
You got that shoulder up, cocked up, got that head down.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Head down. That's what
you got. That mouth agape. Because she's trying to always accentuate that jawline.
And she's got the head down, eyes looking up.
Mm-hmm. We're both in the car right now doing these poses. Anybody driving past us is like, oh, fierce queens in the car for sure.
They are some fierce scream queens.
Fierce scream queens.
Scream queens.
Scream queens. Fist scream queens. Okay, and then we've got Bella Heathcote. She's Gigi.
She's just a bitch.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the non-misogynist way. I just mean...
She just has a bitchy attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that she's unkind. Okay, we'll keep going.
Nice.
We have a little like, hey there daddy, Keanu Reeves moments going on.
Yeah, but he's like nasty.
He's not being a hey there daddy.
Dirty, scuzzy.
Yeah.
Like,
he's like being a perv. And he's being a prevert, and
he's a total prevert.
He's also being like, kind of like, he's skeezy. And he just, like, wants to make a dollar off of, like, these terrible, like, situations that come to his hotel.
Poor girls that need a place to stay for cheap.
Okay, Christina Hendricks, she's a vibe. She's an entire movie.
We love her.
She's only in this movie for, like, 4 minutes.
She's everything.
But she is, like, she's what the whole, like, the film is that right
she
there.
She represents almost all of
LA. Yeah.
Like all the bad things about LA.
She's like that pretty face in LA that like can cut you deep. Like,
yeah.
Cause in the, we'll get to it. Okay.
Gives
all
right. Backhanded compliments.
Yep. We'll get to it. Okay. And then Carl Glusman. Aw, Dean.
He tries.
Okay.
I got a truck. Big semi trying to cut me off.
Trying to get our number.
If you hear screams and crashes.
There's screams. Well, they wouldn't because...
Yeah, who's going to edit this?
Who's going to put it up? So nobody. Or I guess like,
hi. Oh my God, we're going to become like a found footage.
Yes!
Podcast.
Found footage podcast.
They went missing.
Yes,
what was found.
We have to, like at the top, let's just mention like the beauty of the film comes from in a lot of ways, the cinematographer capturing just like LA.
Yeah, and who's the cinematographer we were talking
about? Natasha Breyer.
Yes, and she does a great job. And it's something about the mix of her visuals with the sound design.
Oh yeah.
And even to the acting and the cast, how everything combined makes the most like dreamy atmosphere.
Yeah, it's all like lent to like the whole film is very moody.
You almost question if anything you're watching is actually
completely real. Yeah, like is this really really happening or is it's also like it's like a fairy tale in a lot of ways. It's like a Grimm's fairy tale. Like you think that Well, you don't think, if you know Nicholas Winding Refn, you know, like, the movie that you're going to walk into is probably not going to be all sugar plum fairies dancing and...
Yeah, going back to, like, Bronson, he loves hardcore violence.
Yes, so, if you've been acquainted at all...
And, like, pops of
violence, yeah, too. At all, because he loves, like, to saturate his films with, like, beautiful faces, but he also likes those faces to get punched the fuck up.
And when he does use violence, it's impactful because it does come very forcefully and out of nowhere a lot of times.
Yeah.
There might be a build-up to it, and you might see it coming, but it's still, like, shocking when it happens.
And that's in ways, like, how he's such a good director, is that, like, the build-up, the intensity to those moments of violence that are happening, you know they're coming, you don't know what it's actually going to be. It's that journey you go on in those moments, and your stomach, like, is just tensed up, that you don't want what's going to happen, but...
And this movie's almost like an hour and 40 minutes of slow burn, and then 20 minutes of that pop of violence at the end, or 25 minutes or so. Of when he just shocks you for, like, the last chapter of the film.
But, like, to say slow burn is a compliment, though. Like, it's not in any ways, like, where you're just like, I don't want...
to us, it's a compliment. It's, other people, it's not, for some reason. Like, some people don't like nuance.
Yeah, or don't even want to, like...
The subtlety of, like, telling a story to pull you in slowly, that so by the end you are... into what's happening to these characters, yeah. And you understand the consequences
better than if you didn't know
the characters.
That lets you kind of like a good mattress, you just kind of like sink it, you know, like it fits you in just right. And in a slow burn movie like this, where it takes its time and it really allows you to like get the vibe of what's all going on and all of that through music and colors and those pops of violence and then a release at the end.
You gotta get that release.
Okay.
So let's start at the beginning.
We get a beautiful... at the very beginning.
I do want to mention the title sequence because it sets the tone for the movie. It's just a lot of colorful...
Glitter
falling and the neon titles and the music, and it sets... It's, I guess, somewhat like electronica mixed with... I think there is an orchestra involved, obviously, but...
It's operatic, but it's also, yeah, it's got that kind of, like, techno-electronic, like, vibe to it. Where you would hear it in a club, but not, like, any club.
Yeah.
A certain type of club.
A neon demon club.
Yeah. And then that title just popping up... around all of the glitter, the neon demon.
And then the first thing we see is an eyeball, and we pull, the camera zooms out. It is a zoom, right?
It's attached to a face, and then we're zooming out. We get, like, a beautiful blonde Elle Fanning, whose throat is cut. She's in a beautiful dress. It's very dramatic.
Yeah, first we're like, oh my god, we're starting with, like, a dead girl.
Yeah, pull out even more, and we see, oh no, this is a photo shoot, this is a photographer, and there, it's like, you know, just like a set that they're shooting on. She's covered in blood, saturated.
And basically he's like, cut, that's a wrap. And we cut to Elle Fanning, like, cleaning herself off. Which, I wonder why there wasn't a shower for her. A lot of sets will have a shower.
No, she had these, like, little wet wipes.
Wet wipes, trying to get all this blood off herself. I'm like, girl, it's going to take
drenched.
All night. But she's in the room with Jenna Malone, our intense, beautiful elf.
Yes. And, Jenna Malone's character, who...
Ruby.
Kind of, Ruby speaks up first and... is, like, trying to be helpful to her, wants to, you know, just... In the beginning, you kind of think, like, that's so nice. She's, like, a good girl, wants her to have a good group of girls.
Yeah, trying to take her under her wing, help her through, navigate this new world she's
in. She can immediately, like, see that this blonde-haired girl, because she doesn't want to reveal her name at first to Ruby... she can see she's timid and shy, but she is also immediately, like, taken in with her.
Because she's gorgeous, but you're right. She's very doe-eyed and innocent-looking, and she puts off this kind of...
It's a deer in the headlights.
Yeah, like, almost kind of, like, a shocked look.
Yeah.
Almost kind of, like, not knowing what's going on.
But it's strange, because then, you know, she does warm up to her. She's like, my name is Jessie. and I'm staying in this like flea bag motel. I'm, you know, you gather that she's a runaway and that she met the photographer online to get pictures, and you're just kind of like, okay.
She's
so
telling
you're,
her like, I don't have parents.
Yeah.
Or
you're
any
like,
family.
Why? You, then you get this moment, this shift from she's not really naive as much as she's hiding something.
Mm-hmm.
So her timidness is like, can I open up to this person when I'm supposed to be? You just get that she's got secrets.
Yeah, within like 5 minutes, we're given this mystery of like, what's really going on with Jesse?
Yeah.
And it might be a mystery that's never revealed fully. You just kind of pieced things together. But yeah. From the get-go, you're given this air of mystery. One, you're given... You're seeing something that's not reality from the beginning. Our first image, we think, is someone murdered. And then, like you said, we do this, like, dolly zoom out that reveals she's on a set. So there's a lot of this, like, what you're seeing is not really reality is also kind of, like, a big theme. So, and it's true, you never really know, is this scene real? Is this real life?
Yeah, it's just all unreliable because things kind of flow in and out of... dreamlike, nightmarish.
It is almost like a
reality.
Stream of consciousness. Like,
yeah.
Just Jesse floating along through these different encounters with the same people, but...
Yeah, and that, too, lends itself to this dreamlike quality, because Los Angeles is huge, and it's... But I understand it's also, like, you know, you do run into the same circles of people, but, like, she just keeps, like, running into the Ruby character. Then she just runs into the other characters that we meet over and over again. And you're like, okay, that also is like, okay, is she kind of trapped in this, like, universe of, I don't
know.
The film's open to interpretation, which is also why I like it.
Because one of the things that is happening in this movie is you feel like things are closing in on Jesse. And that's part of it. It's like, we keep seeing the same people because they're kind of closing in on her. There's something they want from her.
Yeah. And she is gorgeous, and she does come off as this, like, deer
in the headlights,
or even just that, like, that natural piece of perfection in the forest that you see, and it's so innocent, you don't want to touch it, you don't want to mess with it, but, oh my gosh, you also want it so much, you want to consume it, because it's like when you see little baby feet, so you're like, oh my god, I just want to eat them baby feet. Do
baby
you?
Feet.
Do you want to eat them baby feet?
And then Ruby, because she thinks this girl's naive and needs to be under her wings, like, come out with me, let's go, we're going
to
go
let's
out
go
tonight.
To a party.
And they go to this party, and it's just like every over-the-top L.A. factory party, basically, right?
Yeah, like it's artsy. There's, like, a model who is, at one point, it looks like she's levitating, and there's, like, this magic, this otherworldliness
very
about
mysterious
it.
Mysterious again.
And then we also, at this point at the party, get these more abstract kind of, like, shots where she's, like, it's her, but she's surrounded by triangles, or, you know, she looks like she's surrounded by mirrors and only seeing reflections of herself. So in those shots, I think she's in her head.
And this is where she gets introduced to Gigi and
Sarah. Gigi, yes. She's addicted to plastic surgery.
She's had, like, her nose down, her chin down, her ears been, like, names off everything. She's like, well, you got to go through a little pain to... Her imperfection, right?
Yeah, and she refers to herself, you know, as, like, a well-maintained car. And to me, that's...
Gross.
Like, in a lot of ways, selling yourself short, sister. Like, Okay, but... So she's obsessed with her own beauty, and we start to gather that this is a big tale about narcissism.
And you can tell these girls are acting like her friends. There's something mean about these girls from the get-go.
Sarah has those, like, intense eyes, like she's always judging.
Yeah, and Ruby comes across like she's trying to be nice, and she's the only one that does seem maybe genuine. Sarah and Gigi, they come off just kind of terrible from the get-go. The way they're questioning her, the kind of, like, weird comments they're asking, you're like, are you food or sex?
Well, you can definitely tell that their environment has influenced the way that they start to, like,
treat people.
Yeah. And so they're immediately assessing her, like, where are you gonna climb? Is it gonna be higher than me? And they say things, it's not verbatim, but they, you know, to paraphrase, like, the conversation they have in the bathroom, it is all about, like, I want to know, where are you in reference to me? Like, are you going to take me down, or are you going to be somebody that I just see in my rear view? And then they also want to gauge her, because sex, eroticism, it's all in this film. These women are beautiful, but they also want to know, like, who are you fucking? You know, is that how you're that young getting to the places that you're getting? Is it because you're having sex with somebody? And then they just want to know, does she have sex? Like, how much sex does she... It's like a weird locker room scene that you would almost see in high school, but elevated to... Because, obviously, the age of them. But they are acting kind of childish. And
bullies. They're acting like bullies, yeah. So she has that encounter. She meets those girls. She automatically knows she has competition with them. She might not feel that way, but she knows that's how she's being sized up.
Yeah, because she also doesn't come off too much like it phases her, but not in the sense of, like, she doesn't come off as formidable as much as full of herself.
And again, everything is so dreamy. Even how they deliver every line, and I'm just going to use an example. Like, give me something to say, Justine. Just anything off the cuff.
The mountains are pretty.
Okay, this is how they deliver in the movie. The mountains are pretty. Like, everything is very slow and kind of thought out.
Questioning, though, like... Yeah, like, oh, that could be a bigger, like, conversation.
Yeah, it's... Everything is very dreamlike.
Mm-hmm. The very next morning, so also, you know, she's staying at that Fleabag motel, and Keanu Reeves is playing her, playing the hotel manager, and
he's a scumbag,
and he lends his hotel to runaways, and
he, some of them out,
yeah,
we learn.
But next morning, she goes to... a modeling agency, and that's where we meet the Christina Hendricks character who plays Roberta.
She's smitten by her from the get-go. She even tells her, like, other girls come in here and they're good, but you're going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
She tells her basically to act. She says, when people ask, you're 19, I need you to sign this parent permission for me.
And she even kind of insinuates that, like, if you can't get your parents to sign it, like, you sign it. She just, like, it's just a signature away, you know, like... And when she goes to get that form, she steps out and goes into, like, the lobby area to get it from a receptionist. And she sees, like, these four girls, these models that are waiting there to see her, like, to get their chance. And she doesn't give up to them. She tells two of them right there to leave. Like, no, bye.
Yeah, she's like, you too.
She's cut and dry. Yeah. And so, and well,
she even says something really shitty, remember, to Jesse. She says, I wouldn't call you fat, but someone else might. So you might want to lose a little weight. And here's Ella Fanning, like, a thin, beautiful woman.
Yeah,
we'll
get to see her not entire physique, but we'll get to see her, and it's like, the words resonate. That you're like, that is so cruel to say.
And I just said something that might have come off. I said a thin, beautiful woman. All women of all sizes are beautiful. I was just happening to say she's thin and she's beautiful.
Yes.
End of that story.
Yeah. I got you, sir. You're good. We're good. So she's 16 years old. We find that out, though.
Yes.
Like, and Roberta is just like, okay, but you tell people you're 19. We've got to assume that everybody just immediately gets transfixed on her.
Like, yeah, because even Dean, the photographer, shows back up. Is this when she has her other date with
him? Yeah, he picks her up outside the motel that she's staying at, and he's so happy for her because she's obviously told him, I got signed.
He's the only one, even though he can be... he knows at one point, finds out she's only 16, so he's a creep. But weirdly, the only person that's nice to her, like, genuinely nice to her. But at the same time, you're like, okay, like, she told you you're 16, and you're still okay with pursuing that.
Yeah.
So
if he is pursuing it in the way, because then we don't ever see him.
They don't ever say how old he is.
Yeah.
Maybe he's like 18 or 19. I don't know. I assumed he was in his 20s.
I assume he is as well. Yeah. But when he picks her up, though, you know, she's so excited too. And he makes the, you know, joke of, like, don't forget me when I'm famous, when you're famous. Yeah. And, like, did they say anything about my pictures? And Roberta did say something.
Call him amateur hour.
Yes. And she requested that Jessie get her pictures done by another photographer, and then she was going to contact him.
Yeah.
So.
But she tries to spare his feelings. Yeah. She's like, no, they didn't mention anything.
And that just shows that she isn't completely void of, like, of empathy and the ability sympathy and
to care. Well, we definitely see an arc from her. You know, yeah. She is kind at the beginning and genuine and maybe scared and vulnerable. Mm-hmm.
But she wants something. And when Dean takes her up to the Hollywood Hills, she tells him, like, I'm not good at these are her words. I'm not good at anything. I can't sing, can't dance, I don't have any talent, but I'm pretty. And people love pretty. And so I can use that to make money.
If this was a Disney movie, this moment up in the Hollywood Hills would have been her I Want, I Need song, and she would have sang it.
Yeah.
It would have been a wonderful moment.
It would have been.
Part of your world.
Part of your world. It would have been amazing. But she's not
an animated
character. Yeah. So she then, I guess the next day, goes to the photo shoot that Roberta wanted her to go on. And, look who's there.
Is it Sarah or Gigi or both? I kind of forgot.
No, it's Ruby, who's the
Ruby's there. Oh, it's later at the casting call where the girls are there. Yeah. So, yes,
she goes to a photo shoot, and she shows up, and immediately the photographer is like, this is a closed shoot.
And it's supposed to be, like, one of, like, the top photographers in L.A., like, that everyone's wanting to work with.
Yeah.
And so people are going to be jealous.
Really jealous. I mean, they're immediately jealous that they... and Ruby is a little apprehensive. Like, she kind of, like, obviously she's been... in Los Angeles long enough to know a thing or two about creeps, and she's immediately worried that Jessie might be prey.
But I also wonder if there's something else about her concern. Is she worried that she's going to miss out? Like, is he part, like, we can go ahead and give spoilers. There's something more menacing going on.
Yeah, well, there is, like, and yeah, it's supernatural. I wonder if he
is, yeah, and I wonder if he is a part of it. And she's worried that there is going to be a ritual or something done without her in their presence.
It could be.
And I didn't pick up on that until, like, the second or third viewing, where I'm like, what is she so worried about?
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's really about Jessie.
Or she doesn't want... Maybe she kind of, like, gauging from Jessie how innocent she is, she's like, no, that's my treat. I want her.
Yeah.
And so she's immediately afraid. Jealous of anybody who might get to her goods, so to speak.
And ourselves are wondering, oh, great, is this going to be a predatory situation?
It is.
And it's borderline is. I mean, he asked her to get naked. Granted, he thinks she's 18.
Yes, he does think she's legal, but he just tells her, drop your drawers, I'm going to cover you in
gold. Yeah, and we don't see anything sexual. Paint. He just like uses his hands all over her body.
It's erotic how he applies it.
It's like, no, she doesn't get a gold crown. Her whole body gets crowned.
Yes.
He has given her the seal of approval. He is painting her in gold. That's what I took from it.
Yes. I mean, I think it's like she's gold. And she does look beautiful. I mean,
it's a cool moment.
It's a cool moment.
Visually beautiful.
The story, yeah. Like, if you didn't have any of the story and you just got that little snippet, you'd be like, oh, what a visually beautiful, stunning scene.
Yeah.
That was, but then, you know, then you add in the story part that you know up to this point, and you're like, oh, creepy. She's 16. So there's layers to the movie.
But then afterwards, she finds Ruby out, like, in the parking lot-ish, or, like, on the side of the building. She's like, it went great. Everything was wonderful. And Ruby's still being a little, like, weary leery.
I gathered from this that Ruby was trying to, like, gauge, like, did he take advantage of you? And, like, you're saying, maybe it's because she's got her own plans for her, you know, like, it's...
She's like, okay, you haven't been deflowered
exactly,
yet.
Exactly. Okay, so Jessie heads back to her hotel room and finds that there is an intruder in there, and so she goes down to get Hank to go in there and to see who the intruder is.
And Hank's pissed off about it. He doesn't want to do it until she says, okay, well, I'm calling the police. He's like, hey, okay, never mind, I'll come help you. And then what do they find? A leopard. Or I guess it's not a leopard. It's like a mountain lion.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have mountain lions up in the hills.
Yeah, it's known that they have them in city limits. So that's that right there, I think, is like a wonderful, not a wonderful nod, but it is a big, that's an LA nod. Like, okay. And also, is it one of those, like, the mountain lion got in, like,
is it really as a symbolic? Lion? Yeah, what is like, it?
Or is she about to be prey?
I've read that some people looking back say it's Ruby.
As a mountain lion.
Like, kind of coming in to check. And...
or she sends her familiar or something. okay, so, and at the same time that Jesse's dealing with this, Ruby meets up for din-dins with her two favorite gal pals, Gigi and Sarah, to shit talk about Jesse. Well, they do shit talk about her, especially Sarah. Sarah can immediately sense that, like, she is competition.
Yeah.
And Gigi, not so much, because Gigi has placed worth in her plastic surgery, and so she's, like, not too scared of the climber yet, mm-hmm. you know. But Ruby, on the other hand, is like, oh, she is gonna be something. She's special. Yeah. And it's
very... what's the word I'm looking for? I almost said...
there's ominousness about the conversation.
Yeah, but I was trying to use a different word. Like, there's something... obviously, there's something underlying that they're talking about. And it's very menacing.
It's seedy, but we just don't really...
menacing,
don't know.
I guess, is the word I'm looking for.
We don't know yet. Going on. But we're feeling it. And, of course, the music, which throughout this movie enhances and elevates all the scenes. Like, if, you know... the whole idea was to get you a little, like, tensed up. That music just, like, amplified it, and your stomach is in the pits. The music's amazing. The composer, I wrote it down, where is he? Cliff Martinez. And he's worked previously with Nicholas Winding Refn, so obviously...
he also did the music for Traffic, too, right?
Yes,
which
yes.
Which is one of my all-time favorite non-horror movies.
Yeah, and that's not Nicholas Winding Refn, but...
no, Soderbergh.
Yeah, it's just... he... and even finding that out, that he did Traffic, it's like, yes! And it's good there, too. So, he's very talented.
He really evokes, like,
he
the
captures
setting
the,
and
yeah,
what's
the
happening.
Atmosphere, the environment. He really gets it. It. Like I said, it enhances it. It's so intense sometimes. Okay, so they're talking. Something's brewing. We don't know, but the conversation, something is brewing underneath. And Jesse next goes to a casting call, and she sees Sarah there.
They're on their undies.
They are all in beige or, like, nude-type underwear and heels, stilettos. So, you know, it's a walk. They want to see if they can runway walk. So it's for a fashion show. And even though I never caught the designer's name. And she does say it. Gigi does, because she's like, oh, I'm, you know, in all of the shows. But what? That's like in a whole other scene. But so it's Jesse there, and there are tons of other models who are all beautiful. And, you know, you can tell that they have a lot invested mm-hmm. as well. And
Sarah is there.
And Sarah's whole thing is, and she brings it up, is that she's older. Like, Sarah's, like, in her...
almost 30s.
Yeah, almost 30s. And so she knows that her time is maxed out, unfortunately, in high fashion, you know, whatever. I don't agree with that, but that is how she feels about things.
Yeah.
And so I am sad in this scene. It feels sad. It feels
dirty.
It's
the mean way to do things.
Mean way to do things, where all these women are standing there, and this man, it will barely look at them as they walk, and they look so
scared
almost, and they, all of them have rejection just painted all over them. Jesse.
Yeah. Not her. She's like, I got this.
Jesse has that...
she knows she's pretty. It's the one thing she knows about
confidence
herself.
And it's not false confidence, because she is gorgeous. And that is why she is... it illuminates right out of her. And that's why it catches his attention. And he can't take his eyes off of her. He's enamored by her. She walks. He smiles. And Sarah is...
not happy about
defeated.
It.
Defeated. And when she's rejected, she runs to the bathroom and she ends up smashing a mirror. And
Jesse hears it. She's leaving happy. Jesse's walking down the stairs, smiling, beaming. She just had the prince of the ball approve her.
Yep.
And she hears the crash. And she kind of goes back to, like, you know, do the nice thing to Sarah and be like, you were wonderful out there, Sarah. I don't know what they don't see in you. And Sarah's pissed. She's like, don't do that, bitch.
Don't you dare. Don't you console me when I am sad.
And then, how does she cut her hand? I forget how...
Well, she's... Okay, so at the point when she goes into the bathroom, Sarah's, like, on the floor, kind of sitting on the floor. And so she's just trying to get down on her level, but there's glass all on the
glass.
And Sarah kind of comes at her, and it scares her a little bit. And we don't know what Sarah was going to do when she came at her, but it did result in Jesse cutting her hand on glass, and then Sarah...
Can't help herself, can't contain herself. She eyeballs that blood and lurches and lunges,
leaps forward.
Yeah. I'm like, lurches gives a slow connotation, so I guess she lunges forward.
Yeah.
And just grabs Jesse's hand and just starts licking and eating that blood.
And so Jesse, like, pulls her hand back and runs out. And
but this is kind of where things start to take a turn. After
it's another pivot, yeah.
Yeah, after this experience, it's almost like Jesse is just full-on narcissist now. Like that thing we were reading earlier today.
Yeah.
It's at this moment where she embraces her full, okay, I'm just going to be pretty.
Yeah. And Sarah had asked her in the bathroom, like, what does it feel like to have everybody, you know, look at you? And Jesse tells her, like, it's everything. So, you know, like, that's her driving, motivating force right there. It's everything to her. The acknowledgement that her shell is her entire worth. It's sad, and it speaks a lot to a lot of things that we're only addressing now in pop culture and
free Britney.
Self-worth for anybody. And, you know, beauty is in all sizes and in all shapes. And we have a... We have a much more evolved idea, and that, but Nicholas Winding Refn doesn't feel that way. That's what he's showing us is the harshness of L.A.
Mm-hmm. He's like, or I don't each other.
Yeah, I don't think that. I don't think the film is in any way applauding the ways that some
it's
people deal with it. It's just like
a supernatural version of what's
happening
to young girls in Hollywood.
It's shedding a neon light on it. Okay, so...
We cut to the fashion show, right?
We get back to the Fleabag Hotel where Jesse has this kind of like dream where Hank busts into her hotel room and holds her at knife point.
And like mouth rapes her with a knife,
right? Yeah, and shoves it like down her throat. But then she wakes up, but then there is Hank going down the... Oh, and before all that... Dean and her,
She's really shitty to Dean at a restaurant. They all go out to eat, and they happen to, of course, they run into Gigi and Sarah and a famous photographer.
Well, that's after they, do the fashion show.
Oh, that's after
the
fashion show?
Yeah, like, she dumps him after the fashion show.
Oh, okay,
So that happens, whatever, the dream things and... Maybe, we'll get back to that. The fashion show, sorry, we jumped ahead. Oh my goodness. So she goes back to her hotel room with her cut hand. I'm sorry, I got caught up in a moment. She takes her cut hand, goes back, kind of has this like pass out moment with Dean. Goes to the...
Where she has the flowers.
Yeah, she he goes to the CVS and gets some stuff for her. And then he runs into Hank, and Hank is like, yo, I want my money. And so Dean gives some money to him, and there's this weird moment where Hank is like, hey, if she's not gonna give you anything, I've got this 13-year-old couple rooms down, you can have her. And so maybe, because we haven't seen, so Dean did kiss her, but then he found out that she was younger than...
And we haven't, and so far all that we know, and she makes a point to say so, Jesse's a virgin.
Yes.
And I think that's important, like we were saying earlier, to Ruby.
Yes. So Jessie's a virgin and she's 16 and she does tell Dean that. It is after they share a kiss. We don't see him pursuing her anymore in a sexual way.
Yeah, I guess he is kind of a
And
nice
so we kind of think maybe, or I kind of think maybe he starts to take her on like a brotherly kind of thing. Like, oh God, you have nobody. But not, because then there is a moment where...
He's waiting for her to turn 18.
Yeah, he's waiting for her to turn 18.
That's what he's doing.
Okay, so, yeah. Anyways, that all happens where Dean pays for the door that got damaged and tells Hank to leave her alone. And then we go to the fashion show. And that's where Jesse sees Gigi. And it's the fashion show that Sarah's not getting to participate in.
And they have a weird exchange in the dressing room. It's kind of like this tug of war of power where Gigi's like, you're in my chair. And but she gets up and gives it to her, but it doesn't seem to faze her at all.
She's like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. Like, just kind of happy to be there. Looking around, very just like, like out of her element, but yet in her, like, finally I'm in my element. She's so happy to be around all of the glitz and glam.
During the actual fashion show is when the switch really happens. She's walking this really surreal fashion show with all these lights and diamonds and things. And she starts kissing her reflection.
Yes.
As she's like, you know,
embracing it. She had just, like, she is doing that because she's elated because the fashion designer tells her, you're going to close my show. So imagine you have little to none experience in Los Angeles in the fashion industry as a model. You show up. You turn in a headshot to like a great agency. They take you on just like that. They give you a photo shoot with a prominent photographer in Los Angeles. Everything is just like, oh, she got that. Oh, she got that. She's just beautiful enough. Uh-huh. Is there something about her? Is she magical or is she? What
Who
is
that
it?
Bucky?
Who that Bucky? Who for that? Sure. So, anyways, Gigi's pissed because baby girl is now walking that fashion show, closing it, which is, that's top model shit. Like, that's high value right there. Yeah. You close the show, you're wearing the end of the show dress.
She got it.
She got it. They all go to dinner that night afterwards, and this is where Dean goes to dinner with her. That's why I'm kind of like, I mean, yeah, he is kind of waiting for her to be 18, because he's still wanting to, like, hold her hand and take her around.
They show up, and Gigi, and is it the designer and another model.
There's a few other models sitting there, and they're all talking about beauty and what's beautiful. And
he's, like, regaling them with, like, some shitty Shakespeare that he knows that he's doing a really hilarious job of reciting, and they're like, oh, did you always know you wanted to be an actor?
You can tell by how they are acting that they have practiced sitting in front of a man who just wants to talk about himself.
Yeah.
And to keep, like, just, I don't know, feeding his own narcissism, because it might be to the benefit of them.
Yeah. Well, Jesse and Dean show up, and they're like, sorry, there's not room for two at our table. So they're like, we'll take another table. But then Jesse turns on Dean in this moment and kind of lets him know, like, you're not worth being around me.
Yeah, because he tries to take up for her, because there is this engagement moment between the two tables where the fashion designer asks Dean if Gigi is beautiful. And Dean says, yeah, she's fine. Because he's not attracted to her. So, yeah, she's fine. And that is it's almost exactly what the fashion designer wanted him to say. He's like, exactly, she's fine. And then he says, but Jesse is perfect.
Uh-huh.
And she's naturally beautiful. And she isn't made up with machines. And she isn't cut into and plastic. So immediately, like, Gigi isn't feeling as confident in herself anymore. Everything she's done, everything she's bought, put into herself.
She's been
exposed. Yeah.
By someone that she thinks is beneath her, too.
Yes. Yeah, she wasn't worried about Jesse, and all of a sudden, Jesse is apex predator. So, she's at the top of the food chain.
And then Jesse's not really nice to him. She tells him, like, yeah, go ahead, leave.
Yeah, Dean's like, I want to go. This guy is like a douche. She's like, all right, then go.
Yeah.
And he waits for her outside, and he's like, is this really what you are wanting? And she's like, no, Dean, it's not what I'm wanting. They want to be me.
Yeah.
Like, she's even above, like, she has...
She's gone.
...inflated her head to the point where, okay, girl, if you climb that high, there's only one way to go.
She believes everything that everybody is saying about her.
Yes. She's,
nobody's better than Jesse at this
moment.
She
is the most perfect human being. And she's also 16.
So she goes home.
Immature herself.
Yeah.
Her frontal lobe has not developed, and it won't for several more years, guys. Okay. So, yeah, Ruby, on top of, like, being a makeup artist, she also works at, like, the morgue. So that's just important to bring up because of something that'll later come up. So Jesse goes back to her hotel. She's feeling good about herself. You know, she's been told she's the most beautiful thing in the planet.
And then all of a sudden, someone tries to get in her door.
Yeah, she has that dream about being held at knife point and choking on a knife.
Yes, is when she gets choked.
And then she wakes up from that scares her. And then...
there's really somebody at the door, but they can't get in. She sits up against the door, not letting them in. And then the person moves along, and you hear screaming coming from the room next door. And this is where I have read different things that people believe maybe this is a dream, because the girl, the 13-year-old that you think or assume is getting killed next door... because you're listening to someone scream and get beat up or murdered or something.
Or raped.
Was actually two doors down, not right next door.
Yeah.
So
that might be, like, just an error in the writing?
Yeah. Or we're looking... yeah, exactly. Or we're just looking too...
yeah. So, okay. But that's why this film is pretty cool. Because you can take a lot of different...
A lot to interpret.
So that scares her, and she calls Ruby and asks if she can stay with her. And Ruby is house-sitting at a very big, huge mansion in the Hollywood Hills.
And there's something going on with that, because Jesse's like, how long can I stay here? And Ruby's like, you can stay as long as you want. They won't care if you're here.
Yeah, it's like, okay, maybe because they're dead!
Yeah, maybe they're not ever coming back.
And she killed them!
And you see her, well, she says, like, yeah, I'm here to feed the dogs and water the plants. And it's true, you do see her, like, watering topless and...
but you never see dogs, so okay. So she comes over, and yeah, Ruby's like, make yourself at home, and it's this humongous, like, palace looking fucking house. It's like, and it's in the Hollywood Hills, so it's got beautiful views. There's a pool, but it doesn't have no water in it. And Jessie's like, take herself a long bathy and have herself a little chow, la douche, as they say in French. And then when she comes out, get ready, Ruby has, like, supplied her with some clothes to wear, but they're very, like, beautiful fabrics
lingerie.
Of, like, satin and make her look beautiful.
She's like, I'm going to comb your hair. My mom used to comb my hair when I was young to make me feel better.
I don't need it for any kind of weird witch's brew I might be
yeah,
making.
And then she puts the moves on Jesse.
Yes, there is a... another, like, rape.
Well, yeah, she comes on to Jesse and is, like, coming on strong, getting on top of her.
She's forcing herself on her. There, attempted rape is happening,
yeah,
for sure.
Of a minor.
So, also, yeah, pedophilia. Oh, my gosh. We could just go on with the crimes being committed right there.
Yeah, it's disgusting. And you're like, girl, get off. Back off.
Back the fuck off. So, she's feeling, like, rejected and
pissed off now because she wanted to take her B card.
Yes, and... for reasons beyond sexual gratification, she wanted to take her V card. Okay, so Ruby goes to work and she is pissed and she's at the morgue because she's also like a beautician for when, you know, people die and you get them ready for caskets and stuff.
She's so pissed off it makes her horny. As she gets on top of this dead Jesse lookalike almost, and.
Well, she's a blonde-haired lady.
Yeah,
definitely has some of the looks.
Mm-hmm. I think it's supposed to be kind of reminiscent of Jesse. And she's, like, straddling her and kissing her, spitting on her.
Well, she's committing necrophilia, which is a crime. There's a lot of crime.
A lot of crimes. A lot of sex crimes.
And you can tell this ain't her first rodeo.
And she's thinking about Jesse. I'm not sure if Jesse's actually filling herself up and getting off next door, but it keeps cutting to Jesse in her lingerie or like her nightie or nightgown.
I think she's just in her head.
In her head. That's why I kind of assume
it
too.
And so I don't think.
Well, then she finds Jesse just like hanging out on. There's like an empty. Nothing ever good comes from an empty swimming pool.
Yeah.
And Jesse's on the diving board of an empty swimming pool. I'm like, girl, you're risking your life right there.
And she's like. She's talking to Ruby and she's confessing really like how women just want to be like her. They want to poke and prod at themselves and slice themselves up to look like a second-rate version
of
me.
She's being very condescending too about it in her very dream-like matter-of-fact way. Like they just want to be like it's all gone to her head. She's full on into the narcissism.
Yes. Which is a huge theme of the movie. The neon demon. The demon might be narcissism. Mm-hmm. The neon.
There could be literal demons in the movie, which there are. There's like kind of demon witches, which we're going to talk about.
There's
and
a lot
then
of
there's
layers.
Like, yeah, it could be the narcissism itself that takes over.
So, yeah, it's kind of Regina George-ish a little bit, like how she's coming off. Like, they all want to be me.
Yeah.
You know, right? Like, I am gorgeousity.
And they've kind of had it. And it's a very dreamy sequence. You can see like downtown LA in the background.
It's just Ruby.
She's
who
kind of
we
floating.
Think hears this,
yeah.
But
and she's kind of floating on the diving board. And
she's in this very flowy gown.
That twilight. You know
it's a pretty gown. But okay, so she thinks she's just talking to Ruby. And then she starts, you know, walking off the diving board and going back into the house. And then she sees Sarah with a knife. And then she sees Gigi. And Gigi got something that wants to fuck
after.
Her up with. And then all three of them are chasing her through the house.
We got a great chase scene.
Tussling with her.
And Jesse grabs a knife at one point.
She's, she's trying to flee.
They're fighting. She gets hit.
She gets back out into the backyard area and she's backing up. And she backs up enough that she teeters right on
the swimming pool edge.
Yeah, edge of the swimming pool. And Ruby pushes her over. And it's a deep pool. I bet you it's like 12 foot deep.
Oh, and it's a gnarly injury that we're about to see, folks.
And she's severe, like all of her limbs are broken. And I bet you like her neck
head
was
busted.
Broken and all that
she's
kind of stuff.
She's bleeding out. She's not even making any noise. Just shaking.
Which
limbs in all different directions.
She wasn't going to make
nasty.
It. Baby girl was going to be dead. So,
and then they all kind of walk down into the pool. And just stare
in a very ritualistic kind of way, like surrounding her and intensely looking at her. And then cut to, we got
them bathing.
Ruby in a bath full of blood and water, and then the two girls, Gigi and Sarah, are in the shower together,
getting all the blood off of themselves,
cleaning it off of them.
And Ruby even has like the blood on her face, like a facial, as she's laying in the tub
and
of blood.
It's not just blood. There's like material, you know, like there's some fat, or not even fat, but like skin particles
tissue.
Maybe you see bits and pieces of her.
Of tissue.
The tissue
like
that you see.
I'm
really
that.
Trying to, yeah, you. Do I need to say it one more time?
One more time.
Tissue. we know that by then she's been consumed.
Yeah, and then it cuts to the shot of Ruby standing in this big, open, lofty space of the house at this huge window that the full moon is shining through.
Yes.
And she's standing there just like
legs
saluting
spread.
The moon. Yeah. And then she lays down and spreads her leg. And you get the shot where like her Connie is like all shadowed out. But then she just starts menstruating everywhere.
There's just blood
almost,
pouring out of her.
I thought it was pee at first because it's coming
but
out.
It's,
like,
yeah. But it is
but
also
dark.
Really thick too. Like it's not. Yeah. It could be pee-pee. It could be blood because it is dark. I think
she's getting ready for a new cycle.
It could be menstrual blood. She's pushing out, for sure.
Pushing out Gigi. Like,
well, and the full moon
Jesse, I mean,
lends itself to that
ritual,
kind of idea
being
of
witchcraft
it. Yeah,
or
and the cycle. And
demonic, which those are two separate things, witchcraft and...
Yes. So a demonic, maybe cultish kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not so much
not
witches
Wicca
as...
Like,
no, but...
Earth Mother.
Still, like, supernatural and still maybe dealing with, like, forces beyond
Ark and
reality. material forms.
I was about to say something that didn't even make sense.
Oh, that's okay. I do often on this podcast. sometimes I'll listen back and be like, oh, what the fuck were you even trying to say? Oh, well, we just keep going. We're almost done, guys. We get to the last bit, because that was the last bit. We'll see if
this is almost like an epilogue, it feels like.
And cut to, it's like the next day, or maybe, maybe a day. Next day is what I think, because of what happens. Yes. So they go to a photo shoot again in the Hollywood Hills, and it's that, and it's the guy, the photographer from the
gold
scene.
Shoot.
Yeah, with the gold. Maybe he was a pervert, but maybe it's because we knew she was 16. And he's shooting outside, and it's these...
girls in these red leather with sunglasses, and they're standing by a pool and palm trees.
It's a mood kind of shoot. And Sarah has taken Gigi to it. She's sitting in the back. You can tell she's still feeling rejected. Like, she's, again, like an older, and that's just by the standards that they've placed in the movie, an older model.
Yeah.
So she is listening to conversations that another model who is on the shoot is making while they're all in hair and makeup. And she's talking about how she's like 20 and how after you're 20, you're basically like done. And how she like wanted to ask them, like, has another girl ever like taken a shoot from you? And Sarah's like, yeah. And Annie says, well, like, what did you do about it? And Sarah says,
I ate her.
So now we know for sure they did eat her. They didn't just like bathe in her blood. They consumed her.
They ate that tissue.
They took the metaphorical and made it literal. The idea that LA consumes you. They were like, we're in LA, we're gonna eat her. That's what we do. But we see Gigi out there on the shoot now with the other model, Annie, and she's like retching like,
yeah, getting sick. She's trying to hold that barf in her mouth. Yeah,
because obviously you don't want to disrupt a shoot. Time is money, and
she doesn't want to get fired.
You want to save that daylight. Yeah, you don't want to. You just don't want to put a bad taste in someone's mouth by fucking with their time and money.
Lee from Black Christmas shows up. She's like, I'm here if somebody needs me. All right? And it's a really weird...
Lee showed up!
I don't know why.
Lee!
I'm like, Nicholas Finding Refn.
Wow,
really...
how was your Christmas, Lee? Damn, yeah, so she showed up. She's like... I can model for you.
I'll hold my hands like a cup or a ball, and you can throw up in my hand.
Lee from Black Christmas, a few episodes
ago. Go back
ago.
A few episodes.
Hi.
If you don't know.
Golly. It's like whenever Tangina shows up.
Now there's going to be Lee.
Oh, God. Okay, so last bit is that she, finally is like, I got to go throw up. She leaves the shoe, goes to the bathroom. Sarah follows her because she's like, what the fuck?
That's my friend. I got to go see what's wrong with her. She's fucking things up.
Oh, wait. No, in between that. So Annie had asked her the question, has a girl ever stole your shoe? Sarah, who had been sitting there looking all forlorn out, on the ocean and everything, the photographer, I guess, just doesn't vibe with Annie. And he straight up fires Annie and asks Sarah to take her spot. And Sarah's like, okay. So yeah. Sarah is doing the shoot with Gigi. And that itself shows a way of, like, good things are happening to her because of the actions that she did by eating Jesse.
Yep.
Okay, so, Gigi, though,
again... Something has to do with something.
Something got to do with something. That's right, boo. Gigi, though, she's like, I'm about to barf. So she does leave the shoot, goes to the bathroom. Sarah goes after her. Gigi breaks down and is like, I can't do this. I just don't got it in me. I gotta get her out of me.
And she starts throwing up like blood.
And an eyeball.
Big eyeball comes out and hits the floor.
It's a perfect eyeball too.
With a lot of chunky tissue.
Tissue, tiss me. Unfortunately, this is another one of those violent moments. Here we go.
Yeah, she's like, I guess not happy with how much of Jesse she got out of her. What did she grab?
There's a pair of scissors because she's, it's a fashion shoot, so they tailor things right on the spot. She grabs a pair of scissors and just cuts disembowels herself. Just takes it and empties out her tum-tums. Literally, her insides are on the outsides.
And I wonder, why did Jesse service Sarah but not Gigi? What was it that it settled fine and helped Sarah?
Maybe she just had Jesse, what it took.
Oh, you know what? It's because Sarah was a plastic and had, like, maybe a natural body.
Gigi was plastic.
Well, yeah, Gigi's the one who's stabbing herself. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's why she couldn't handle... I said the wrong name, but yeah. Because she couldn't... Maybe because she wasn't natural?
Who knows? I also think there's motivation to it. Like, she just, at the end of the day, couldn't hack it for a demonic play, you know? Like, she just didn't have what it took. And Sarah, who is completely absorbed with... Yeah. The mean side of everything.
She reaches over and grabs the eyeball and just pops it in her mouth like it's some popcorn.
Eats it. And then walks off. And it's like, they'll find her.
So we begin with Jesse's eye and we end with Jesse's eyeball.
Yes. And then we get our credits. And the credits are like the Mojave. They are just showing maybe the dead part of L. I mean, it's pretty, but... It's
the
dead.
Outskirts, the desert,
and it is
wild.
It's maybe Sarah. We just see the back of someone. It's either Sarah or Jesse. I just can't remember at this point who it is, and I didn't write it down. But there is just like somebody walking in the desert that we see their back, and then they leave, and we just see just the little mountainous area, and then
roll
there
credits.
Roll them credits. Roll that beautiful bean footage.
Roll that beautiful bean footage. So yeah, it's definitely one of those movies that maybe a second viewing will help. I honestly didn't really care for it the first time I saw it. It was rewatching it for this that it kind of struck a chord with me more.
Yeah.
I got into it more this time and just kind of went with the visuals.
And then that third time, that fourth time, you're just like picking up on all of those little... What are those, Easter eggs? Or not Easter eggs, but like the foreboding things that you didn't see before. All right.
But yeah, we're going to go to Vegas.
We're going to Vegas.
We're almost into Arizona, so we got another state to drive through before we're into Nevada. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go to the neon graveyard.
Boneyard. I mean, whatever. It's neon.
And then we'll be back to talk to you about our favorite scenes, give our knife ratings.
Maybe talk about what's up next.
Yeah.
All right. See you guys in like...
Just a tit.
A tit. See ya.
Hi, and welcome back.
Oh my gosh. Hey guys. It is a windy, windy afternoon in Arizona.
You might have caught me telling the wind to shush just now. We are heading back from our wonderful whirlwind of a extended weekend in Vegas.
Yes. We had a lot of fun visiting my sister.
Hi, Dakota.
She and seeing our wonderful little pup.
Oh,
Dobby.
My baby boy Dobby.
He's a little,
my little nephew.
English bulldog. We're aunties.
Yes.
Okay. So, but we had tons of fun in Las Vegas. We stayed COVID safe, but tried to enjoy and get outdoors.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're having to cut our trip a day short, and we are heading towards a blizzard. We're trying to get home kind of in time to beat a blizzard that's coming to town.
Yes.
It was either leave a day early or be in Vegas for like 3 or 4 more days, and we have work and things. And
we have responsibilities, guys.
So, we were like, we gotta go. But we had a great time, and we did make it to the Neon Boneyard.
Yes.
Boneyard.
That was a lot of fun. It was exactly what we thought it would be, but it was beautiful, and...
It's, like, really great photo opportunities. It's lit up. You get some cool history. They have some of, like, the oldest lit neon signs from Vegas. They had, like, the first sign from a gay bar in Vegas. They have, you know, the old... But iconic Hard Rock
and like Moulin Rouge sign.
Yeah, the Moulin Rouge, Liberace.
Yeah, Liberace, Stardust. They have, and a lot of them were lit up. And then they had a lot of like, you said history, but fun facts about like neon signs and like the chemistry behind them and how you can like tell if a sign like and it's a neon sign and not like an argon or something sign.
Yeah.
So guys, basically we're geniuses and have a PhD now in neon signage.
There are 32 or 33 colors that are certified neon.
Neon! 32.
It was something like that. Yeah, I tried to keep that fact in my head because I was like, that is so cool.
That is so super neat. But and we took a guided tour. So Dave, our guide, he took us.
He told us so much.
Around, it felt long enough. Like, we got to, and these signs are huge, like 40 feet, and they would be laying on their sides.
And he let you, like, while he was talking, kind of wander around, take pictures. And he encouraged you to take pictures. He's like, take as many pictures as you can. We weren't supposed to take videos, but we may or may not have snuck a video or two.
And not Oops. Like we were going to like make any money out of it.
It was like more or less like boomerang.
Yeah, it was like boomerangs. Instagram. It was like memories. It was like, get over it. I'm not selling that shit. I'm not the paparazzi.
Paparazzi. I think my favorite sign was the Stardust.
Okay. All right. Well, I loved the Hard Rock Cafe. Yeah, the Hard Rock Cafe. And then I did like the old Harris sign that they had that was a whole bunch of H's.
Yeah, that was cool.
It was really neat. And he would talk about like how many bulbs were in a sign. There'd be like over 1,000 light bulbs on these signs. Like the Stardust had like over 1,000. Yeah. It was so cool.
Do you know what I associate the Hard Rock Cafe with the most?
Your mom.
Yes, because she's a famous rock star. Uh-huh. But no, most importantly, honey, I blew up the kid.
Oh,
I blew up the baby. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
It's like all in Vegas, and he's like, I think, tears up the Hard Rock.
I think he tears up the Hard Rock. Well, he does.
Yes. I haven't watched it in like 20 years, but I watched the shit out of that movie as a kid. Carrie Russell was the babysitter.
That's right.
Her beautiful curly
She had
locks.
Them curls. It was before Felicity. It was just, here she is.
But you know what? There, I thought of a really cool correlation between the Neon Demon and Neon Boneyard. It's both about, like, aging beauty.
Yes.
And, like, where things...
Oh, my God.
Where things go to, like, rest or die, and how we discard things after we consider them old and maybe not as, like, beautiful or glamorous or glitzy anymore. And
yeah.
So I like that connection with the Neon Boneyard and Neon Demon.
Oh, I totally am there with you. That is such a great little segue into what we are here to wrap up.
We're gonna wrap it up. Wrap up that movie.
We also got to eat some yummy food and can't pass up the opportunity to name off a couple of restaurants that we visited.
Off,
so we ate at Mas Por Favor. We got to stay in the speakeasy in the back.
Ooh, it was so cool.
They hit my back. Like, they hit my back, my mouth, from my mouth.
The decor
sides.
Was nice and dark, and it's like roses and skulls.
Yes.
It was like our aesthetic.
It was definitely like Dia de la Muerta. It was good.
Yes.
A lot of that, and they had amazing cocktails, all kind of tequila, and they're full bar, but they specialize in tequila. And so we had margaritas, we had they were called like the El Borracho, and they were these tequila cocktails that were inside a paper bag that was smoking.
Mm-hmm.
So good. We had those Dorito bags that were covered in nacho toppings. I had a deep fried taco, and it kind of tasted like a cheeseburger inside.
I had a pulled pork taco, and the tortilla was made out of like a smashed down, kind of like they would do a make a tortilla, but it was the Hawaiian roll.
Oh my God, delicious.
Hawaiian roll turned into a tortilla.
And then to cap it off, we had the Choco, house-made Choco Taco. Like, it oh my God, and we had lots of drinks. Oh my goodness, guys, we ate like queens, like scream queens.
Dakota made us a special meal on our first night in.
Oh,
yes. It was wonderful.
It was from a TikTok video, that like feta tomato thing. It was amazing. Mm.
Thanks,
girl. We ate like ramen at this restaurant called Sora and had some wonderful Japanese beer. Everything was amazing!
Yeah, we tried to keep it outdoors. Like, the great thing about right now for COVID times is the Neon Boneyard is all outdoors.
Yes.
And they keep it small groups, I don't think more than 10, And so you can social distance while you're out there. You don't have to huddle in a group. It's a perfect place if you're in Vegas for COVID time.
Huddling and cuddling.
Went out to the Seven Magic Mountain.
Yes.
A cool little roadside art installation. Great for Instagram photo ops.
Yeah, and they're these kind of, and some of them are neon painted. Just different colors of bright rocks in the, you know, mountains and in the desert. It was true gorgeousness beyond measure. We got to see the Welcome to Las Vegas sign, another like neon sign that we took pictures in front of.
But yeah, it was great. We had a good time, and now we're heading back towards a blizzard.
Yep, there's no neon city there. It's a snow cover. They're going to get like a foot of snow. So, yay! Yeah.
Let's hope we get home in time.
We also had some good coffee at Bad Owl Coffee and Samba Latte. They were like, guys, Las Vegas, duh, we know about like the casinos, about this, about that. We know. But other things, the other attractions.
Food,
culture, art. Staying away from people with COVID on the strip, you know.
We'll definitely be back to do more episodes probably in Vegas. There's a lot to mine there, so.
Oh, yeah. We watched some TV, too. We caught up with that, like, documentary. Crime Scene.
Elisa Lam. Yeah.
The Vanishing of Elisa Lam.
It was good.
It was great. Yeah, catch it. And then
Mystery Solved.
Free Britney. We watched the...
Yes, hashtag Free Britney. Poor girl.
Oh, my gosh, girl. We got you. Hashtag Free Britney.
Yeah, we were radicalized. We are part of the movement.
We're part of the movement. And you're speaking about a girl who got kind of like eaten up and churned out.
Yep.
Here we go.
Neon Demon.
She did.
Britney Spears was Neon Demon.
Neon Demon. Okay, so we went to the Neon Boneyard and you had the revelation about that tie into Joshua. So let's get into it. Like,
What's your favorite scene, girl?
What's my favorite scene?
I'll
go for it. My favorite scene, I think, is that transition scene where she walks down that runway. She has that trippy moment with the triangles and the blue. And she just becomes she flips. She becomes a neon demon.
Yeah, it's very hypnotic, menacing.
And I like it because there's this wonderful music that, you know, kind of electro, but also like orchestra. There's that, it's just that subliminal feeling going on. She's selling way more than just her body. She's selling her soul right now. Like, she's willing to step into the dark side, walk that catwalk, stomp on other people if need be, because people want to beat her.
They
want to beat her. And it's a frightening scene, but not in like a horrific way. It's just one of those like, oh my gosh,
something's going on here.
Yeah, it's a little trippy.
There is a shift happening.
There's a shit happening. I mean, a shift happening.
Don't shit on a shift.
So it's beautiful, and it is one of those like non-violent moments. But like I said, there's something kind of terrifying about it. It's frightening what's still happening, because you know that she's stepping into the dark side. Okay. What about you?
My favorite's kind of a collection.
You're getting a whole collection?
I'm getting a collection.
Jeez.
Volume 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I feel like she's at her most vulnerable, and it's, to me, I'm always a little bit more anxious when she's at the hotel. So, when she discovers a leopard, when she has the dream of Keanu sticking the thing in her mouth, when she's hearing the murder next door, just kind of all the moments at the hotel.
Well, like, geez, that's a lot of different things.
Well, I'm going along with the fact that it's not the supernatural in this, that sometimes in the scary, and we both made a point not to pick the ending. The most obvious choice.
Kinda
of course,
the
last 25 minutes is the most gnarly and awesome.
Yeah, so but, we did try to, like, we talked about, we'll leave that end for what it is.
So all I'm saying is I'm most worried about her, most kind of on the edge of my seat when she's at the hotel.
Yeah.
Also, like, just more of a human worry or vulnerability than it is.
And she cut about, her hand, is it a witch? Passing out.
Yeah.
Like, she getting dreams where she's getting that knife down her throat. Those are all you know, something like you don't want to wake up, you don't want that to happen to you. You identify like a little bit, not relate because you haven't probably woken up with somebody yeah. doing it. But
and the fact that she's living this glamorous life now, but yeah. still, like the real her is at the dingy mm-hmm. hotel. She's trying to still hiding from something, but we don't quite know.
Yeah,
that it would be my bag.
She's just she ended up being food.
Yeah, food for some demons.
Ravenous demons. Neon demons out there. That's right. Okay. Wow. So, yes. Give me your knife rating. How many slashes do you give it?
Out of 5 knives, I'm going to go 3. I do enjoy it. I enjoy it more than when I first watched it. And I think each of you, I kind of enjoy it a little bit more. It is a little bit style over substance. I do think he is saying something, though. You know, obviously, it's a comment on our culture. But, and I don't think it's shallow, but it is a lot about the visuals, the pretty outfits, the cinematography, the music, the glitz, the glam. Like, this certain look he's going for.
Yeah.
To kind of juxtapose the blood and the violence.
Yeah.
Blood and high heels.
I agree with your knives. I give it 3 knives. And your assessment, yeah, I follow with, because all of those things are good, but they don't quite make it, like, great, like 5, 9, like, all of those things, they do add to it, they elevate it, they, you know, it's very artsy, and it's pretty, and, but because I want it to be maybe a little bit more horrific, or that the whore isn't the unsettling part, like, you know, it's always the music that build up before, whatever, yeah. like the payoffs are just a little different, but I do enjoy the end when she disembowels, not enjoy, but like,
it's
that's
a good ending,
yeah, I like it. And it's an immediate, like, it's also, like, she's so used to cutting into herself that seems like exactly what you do to remove a problem, uh-huh. you just cut it out, and so I do like where the message, I just kind of wish maybe the message was a little bit more spelled out. And, yeah, maybe some more, the eyeball eating's good, but I do like it's,
yeah,
what it's trying to do.
Yeah, you just walk that fine line where you spell it too much out. You're yeah. like in Lifetime movie.
That's true, yeah.
It's moralized too much.
Yeah. I don't want it to be a weird PSA. I didn't. That's not what I'm saying. Yeah. But, okay.
Well, guys.
We're done.
We're in COVID times. Yeah. And things are still shifting around for next month's episode. It's going to be a mystery episode. Right now, it's a mystery to us, too. But you will get an episode next month.
We're
excited to figure it out. Yeah. So we will see you next month for episode 62.
Hold on, though, before we leave. We do want to say thank you so much for the wonderful review that was left by Tycan17. Thanks.
Yeah, it was
really hard.
Yeah, when it really was heartfelt.
Hashtag
meant a lot to
I've
us.
Been
it,
seen.
It helps us out a lot. We really appreciate yeah. it. Thank you so
wonderful.
Much. And remember, yeah, go check us out on iTunes, or I guess with Apple. We're on all the platforms, guys. Stitcher. What else is there?
Yeah, like, give us a review.
We're on all the
wherever
stuff.
You're at,
Google
give
Play.
Us a review. Great. We love hearing. And if you guys ever have an idea, please let us know. Like, we got to get all around the USA.
Yeah, we're always looking for interesting movie
DM
road trip combo.
So
yeah, give
Instagram.
Us your suggestions.
Yeah. Hit us up. All right.
Yeah, we'll see you later.
Love you. Bye. Bye.